What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the Inventing the Future podcast. In this show, we tell the stories of the visionary tech entrepreneurs that are solving the world's biggest problems. This is Julian Alvarez, and I'm a software engineer at Facebook and the co-founder and CTO at a startup named Vize. My guest today is Alishba Imran, an 18-year-old woman that is passionate about finding the intersection between significant problems and the cutting-edge technology that can solve them. She is truly inventing the future. Alishba is a co-founder at Voltex, which is a machine learning company developing software to accelerate the testing of energy storage devices from 3 months to 3 days. She's also a developer at Hansen Robotics, which is an AI and robotics company dedicated to creating socially intelligent machines that can enrich the quality of our lives. And finally, she is also a machine learning intern at Kindred.ai, where she is developing more intelligent machines using cutting-edge techniques in reinforcement learning and imitation learning. In the past, she has worked with blockchain to solve the problem of drug counterfeits in developing countries. So you might be wondering the same thing that I was throughout all of this, which is, how the hell has she been able to do all of that by age 18? Well, we'll learn more about Alishba's mindset and the incredible work that she's doing in this episode. And we'll also cover topics such as how she thinks about problem solving and how she determines what technologies and problems are most important and how she goes about prioritizing them. And also for this episode, I'm doing something new where I'm going to be talking about some of the top actionable insights from the episode. So stick around to the end where you'll be able to hear those actionable insights. So with that, let's go ahead and dive into the conversation. So yeah, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Excited to talk today. And yeah, to get started, I'd just love it if you could start by telling me a little bit about who you are, your story, and what got you interested in this entrepreneurial journey that you now find yourself in.
For sure. So I'm currently 18 years old and working in machine learning and blockchain and applying that to a lot of different problems within robotics, healthcare, as well as energy. But essentially, like for me, I have just always been really interested in like solving problems and really interested in coding and programming. So when I was 13, 14, I basically self-taught myself like programming. And then when I was 15, 16, started to get deeper into like deep tech and learning about like technologies like machine learning, blockchain, teaching myself a lot of the programming behind that as well to actually start building like my own projects and then eventually to work with companies on like real life projects. So previously I've worked in the blockchain space. I worked on developing a platform to help track counterfeit medication within supply chain systems of developing countries. And that's a huge problem today because nearly 40 to 50% of medication that people are consuming can actually be counterfeit. And so through the blockchain platform that I developed, you could essentially track and authenticate that every step of the way through kind of all the stakeholders, pharmacies, consumers, distributors that are involved in that like supply chain process to authenticate it. So part of that platform got integrated now into some work that IBM Blockchain is doing because they do a lot of work and just enterprise solutions in general. So applying that to supply chain tracking in a lot of different industries as well. And then I've worked on applying my skills at companies like TD Bank. I was working on internal DevOps tools. So again, in the blockchain space, we were looking at Web 3.0 protocols like Solid and Wrapped, and also looking at just different decentralized frameworks for digital identity. So they had all of this like client data, and we're trying to figure out how do we use this to basically authenticate and verify their clients and to help them kind of access to different financial services at the bank. So that was a platform that I helped to build and kind of pilot in the company. And so that's getting integrated now into a platform called Verified Me that integrates into some of the banks in Canada. I am from Canada as well. So that's like where that connection is. But yeah, so that's some of my work in the blockchain space. Now I'm more focused on machine learning. And so I've worked with a professor and master's student at San Jose State University to reduce the cost of prosthetics from $100,000 to $700. Part of that work was developing a new 3D printed material and manufacturing technique to reduce the cost, but also working on machine learning techniques for actually manipulation for making prosthetics easier to use for amputees. And then I've also worked on research in neurosymbolic AI with Hansen Robotics. So they're the creators of Sophia the Robot, who's kind of like, if you've seen any sort of robot humanoid on the media, it's probably her. So I worked in her research and like engineering for her manipulation. So we had the chance to publish some papers there, which was really exciting. And also for my work in prosthetics, I published some work there. And now I'm working on my own startup. So Voltex, we're working on optimizing and accelerating energy storage. So happy to talk more about that later in the interview, but that's kind of an overview of some of the things that I've done.
That is fascinating. Yeah. And one quick footnote is that for anyone that doesn't know about Sophia the robot, look her up. The only video I've seen is when Tony Robbins interviewed Sophia. And that was like one of the craziest things I've seen. So I'll include that in the show notes as a fun little video to watch. But yeah, I really love your focus on the intersection between big and significant problems and cutting edge technology that can actually enable new solutions to be able to solve these problems. So there's a lot of directions we can go in given the breadth of the work that you're doing. But I want to take a step back really quick and just ask, like, how did you get started? You mentioned you taught yourself coding at 13, and that's very atypical. Like, where did that come from? Why did you just suddenly decide you wanted to start coding at 13?
Yeah, it was definitely very spontaneous. So like I said, I naturally just loved problem solving. From a young age, I was just really curious. I would just question everything to the point where it was probably really annoying for my parents. But that was just like the type of person that I was. And just when I came to middle school, I remember there was like a robotics club at our school, and I joined that. And that was where I first kind of learned about just coding and programming in general. Obviously, we weren't learning like cutting edge programming techniques or like Python or anything. It was just very simple, like scratch programming. But even that, like, I think was so fascinating to me, just being able to literally sit down and have like a laptop and write a few pieces of lines. And then now you have this like program that's running and actually has some sort of function. To me, that was just really fascinating. And so I think it just piqued my interest. And then obviously I was working on stuff in robotics as well, and got to do a lot of competitions in middle school in that area as well. And so I would say that was really initially what sparked it. So a little bit of exposure in school. I wouldn't say I was learning like a lot. So I was definitely grateful that I got that exposure though. And then through that, I think I just was really interested. So I would just teach myself in my free time whenever I had time. And then when I got to high school, I actually started to go deeper into it. And as I mentioned, like actually build my own projects and apply my skills to like real problems.
That's really interesting. So it looks like it's a combination of both like a little bit of exposure through school and your environment, but mostly taking that into your own hands and applying self-education and self-learning to actually pursue that interest forward and not just depending on what school would educate you on.
Yeah. And I think that's honestly what it comes down to. Like, one piece of advice that I tell everybody is just like, try to do as many things as you can do when you're young. Parents always ask me, like, how do we get our kids to do this and whatever it may be. And my advice is always just, I think one thing my parents did really well was they just put me in a lot of things when I was really young. So like, I remember elementary school, I just did a lot of clubs. Like, I was part of a lot of community groups. Even middle school, did way too much stuff. It was good because I just realized these are things that I like and these are things I don't like. And I think it's hard when you're young to maybe know these are things that I like. But I think it's actually easier to know things you don't like, because those are things that like you're doing and they naturally just drain you. You know, that's not where your energy goes. And that for me was really helpful because I realized like quickly things I didn't like. And whenever something piqued my interest, I was like, all right, I'm just going to go deeper into this. Like, there's no harm. I have the time. And I was just learning. And my parents throughout that, like, they tried to support me or put me in like environments or groups where that curiosity could kind of cultivate and grow further. That's just like a general piece of advice. And so to your point about exposure, I think it really just starts with that. It's like the first person you see that does that thing and you're like, oh, I can do that too. They're my age and they're working on these really cool things. And that's another reason why I think community is so important, because it can be a really helpful kind of motivating factor to help you overcome the very first internal barrier of like, can I actually do this thing? Can I actually learn this? When you see other people do it, you realize I can actually do it, and you kind of figure it out from there.
I don't know if you've read this book, this really good book called Algorithms to Live By, but it really makes a good point of the trade-off between explore versus exploit, where basically anytime you make a decision, you kind of have a trade-off between these two things. And the classic example is, should I go to a restaurant that I already know about and that I know is really good, or should I try something new, right? Should I exploit the knowledge that I already know, or should I explore and take the risk of potentially getting a restaurant that isn't as good, or maybe you end up finding one that is as good. And basically, the book talks about how there's this trade-off, and depending on your circumstance, like for example, if you're going to live in a city for 5 years or something, you should explore as much as you can in the beginning so that all of those years that you're there, you can exploit that knowledge. But if you're only going to be in a city like one more week, it's better just to exploit what knowledge you already have and make the best use of it. So I think the younger we are, the more important it is to explore as much as we possibly can and discover what we like and don't like. That way, as we grow older, we can specifically narrow down and focus on and exploit whatever passions we have discovered throughout the journey.
I love that book, by the way. It's like one of my favorite books. But I think that's like a really good kind of parallel between what I was kind of talking about, that example that you gave. And I think a lot of it is also self-awareness. It's easy to do all these things, but if you don't have self-awareness throughout that process, then you're just doing a bunch of things. You're not actually learning anything or realizing something new through that experience. And so I also think part of it is building self-awareness from a young age. And I think a lot of that comes through your environment, parenting, like learning about. One thing I love is like philosophy. And I think learning about philosophy is really helpful. Obviously, not just taking things for what they are, but figuring out how does that piece of it, philosophy, apply to like my life? And how can I use that to become more self-aware? And a lot of self-awareness comes from just self-reflection. And so if more and more people are thinking about self-reflection, I think from a young age, you naturally kind of lead a life of more self-awareness, which allows you to be able to actually learn from experiences as you're going throughout life rather than just go through it and then kind of end up in a spot where you're like, oh my God, that's kind of what happens when people get to university and they're like, oh, I have to pick something to do for the rest of my life. But like, that to me is always a very bizarre concept. So I think a lot of it comes down to that.
Do you do things like journal or meditate to train your self-awareness, or how do you usually practice that self-awareness constantly?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is just being intentional about setting time out of my day, or usually it's not every day because there's just so much going on in the day. But even if it's just like every 2 months or like every 1 month, and you just literally put it in your calendar and you're like, this for like 1 hour or 2 hours, I'm literally just going to sit down and reflect on things I've been doing, like how I've been feeling in general, just like your life, right? And like, how do you feel? What's like your mental state? Are you enjoying the things you're doing? Are you not enjoying them? And like, really, why? And so I think that has been really helpful for me, is just putting time and actually putting it down that I'm going to do this helps a lot. And then, like you said, ways to train that I think are also like meditating. Meditating is like a really helpful technique, I think, for being able to just be more mindful. A lot of it's just mindfulness and how you can train that. And it comes differently for everyone. I think meditation works really well for some people. For some people, it doesn't work well. And so for me, what works the best is literally just putting down like all of my thoughts, because I usually just have so much stuff happening in my brain. If I can just put it down and then see it, then I can kind of understand what I'm thinking.
I agree. I've been developing more of a habit of journaling. I'm obsessed with Notion, but recently, you just have to. That's how you develop. I've been developing my life operating system through Notion, and it's incredible. But recently, I've been messing more with Rome Research, as I'm sure you've heard of. And Rome is really interesting because you can create bi-directional links. So Notion is more of a hierarchy, right? It's like folder structures. Things are embedded within each other. But Rome Research is more like a graph where all these ideas are kind of like in the open, but you can make links between different words. And on your point about journaling and reflecting on your feelings, you could, for example, create a link for each emotion, like fear, sadness, happiness, excitement, or whatever. And then if you do that constantly, you can look at all the times in which you reference excitement or fear or sadness and see like what those patterns are. And the key to self-awareness, I think, is to be able to detect those patterns that are constant in your life to get a better conception of who you are and therefore be able to make the most of yourself from that understanding.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think a lot of it is, like I said, putting down your thoughts, and then you can kind of understand where things are coming from and making a connection for like why you might be thinking a certain way or why you reacted a certain way in a certain situation, like whatever it may be. I think just being able to actually think about it and being intentional is kind of the first step that I think not a lot of people are doing, right? Like the first thing is just being intentional about actually doing that. And then I think the rest is different for how you kind of reflect and think through that is different for everyone. But the intention is what's important, in my opinion. Yeah.
That's the key. That's how you make sure you're working on the highest impact things, because if you're not proactive, you're reactive. Therefore, you won't be doing the highest priority things. Yeah, that's really interesting. So you've been doing a lot of things. You've started with blockchain, but now you're like going more into machine learning and AI. And I think naturally, this is kind of what you're doing more so with Voltix. So I'd love if you could give a 30 second to 1 minute pitch on what Voltix is and yeah, the problem that you guys are aiming to solve.
Yeah, for sure. So Voltix is working on solving one of the key bottlenecks within development of batteries and supercapacitors, so electrochemical devices. And that key bottleneck is within long duration manual testing, which can take anywhere from 3 months to 1 year today. And what we're doing is we're essentially developing a platform, like a software platform that can actually help to reduce that testing time.
Yeah, it's really interesting because something you had mentioned to me is that currently it takes like 3 months to a year to be able to develop a lithium ion battery. And if you look at electric cars, one of the greatest limiting factors of these electric cars is the batteries. So the way you had described it is that if you can find a way to improve the process through which batteries are made, then that will enable these cars and other things that use the lithium ion batteries, especially like electric cars as well, flying cars in the future, right? They're also going to need lithium ion batteries. So what I really love about this is that you're kind of taking such a deep analysis into the problem to the point where you're identifying the problem in the process, not necessarily the technology, but the process and improving that.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about like the industry itself, I think a lot of people are working on developing the next best battery, right? Like the next best electrode, electrolyte that will allow us to have higher energy density output. But I think we need that for sure. But what we also need to understand is like, how do we actually optimize the process and development in which batteries are created today? Because reality is if we do have like that best battery that works really well, has the best like energy density, but it just takes us so long to develop, we can't actually scale that up at the scale that we'll need. And the truth is like, we're going to need it at a massive scale, because like just taking electric vehicles, the growth is insane. I think in the next like 10 years, there's going to be like 140 million more electric vehicles on the road. That's, I think I have that number right, but there's a lot of electric vehicles, but also just within like solar panels and stationary applications where batteries are used today, we need more of that. And I think it's a huge barrier for me, how I got into it was like, why aren't we using renewables today? And one of the key reasons is because renewables are intermediate and we don't have stable renewable energy that's running throughout the entire year. So we need energy storage systems. We don't have enough capacity today. And the reason is because we don't have enough of these batteries. And so, like you said, if we can help develop these batteries faster, then we can actually help these companies increase their production and their actual scale up and throughput for how many batteries they're producing and actually commercializing per year. And that's what's like the motivating factor for us in building this.
That's so interesting. What I'm curious about, though, is that this is like a very niche problem in the sense that not many people know about it. So how did you even discover this problem? Like, what was your process for discovering it? And yeah, how'd you go about it?
Definitely. Both my co-founder and I are just really passionate about, like, interested in this space. And we think this is something that definitely needs to be built. And we're huge believers in, like, we want to build this. We want to create this future. And so for us, it was really like renewable energy. Like I said, we asked ourselves, okay, why don't we have scalable renewable energy today? Key reason is energy storage, or one of the reasons is energy storage. And so what we did was, okay, let's understand why we don't have enough energy storage. We broke that down further. So we looked at key energy storage devices, like anything from batteries, supercaps, flywheels, like hydro pump storage, broke it down in terms of its entire value chain to really understand all the way from like raw materials to manufacturing to production, and then actually like scaling up these devices. What is the process like? And as we did that, we started to kind of see themes amongst like the development process of long duration development that was like manual testing, whatever it might be, in terms of just taking a long time, right? And so that ended up being a huge cost for these manufacturers to actually develop these devices. So that was the process. It was really breaking down the cause of what the problem is. And I think a lot of it just comes from questioning every kind of hypothesis you have. So when you find an answer to a question, just keep asking yourself why. And I think that it's a very general framework that is used a lot in like McKinsey and a lot of these like consulting firms, but it works really well because that is the reality, is you need to be able to just ask yourselves why enough times to the point where you can really understand what is the core thing that relates to this like overarching problem. And that was really it for us, was when we found this problem, we were able to link back clearly, these are the things that need to be solved in order for us to have this vision that we have for the future. And when you can make that clear connection, that's kind of when you know you've reached the core problem that you want to solve.
Interesting. Yeah, the key to doing a root cause analysis is just ask why, like everything you can, and combine that why exercise with using a lot of first principles and understanding what really does it take, what are the materials and everything involved. And I think when you combine those two, you're able to get to conclusions that most people don't get to, because it is surprising how few people actually ask why repeatedly to the point where they get a new level of insight that most people don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. And I think that's like one of my kind of key takeaways. Like, I'm in San Francisco right now, so just moved here for the summer. It's been insane because obviously there's so many startups here. And it's very much like a build culture. It's like everybody is trying to build a startup or is trying to do something new. And you're also in San Francisco, so I'm sure you can like understand what I'm trying to say here. But what I've found is a lot of people are really focused on building products that have very gradual progress on what already kind of exists today, whether that be like a SaaS product or like a new social media app or whatever. And there's nothing wrong in that. I think we need that. But what we need more is people that are focusing on really hard problems and understanding kind of the root of those problems and solving those. And so that's one thing I found. And then I've also found a lot of startups that are like, we have this idea, but they're not even sure if there's a market for it. They're like, you know, we don't know if this is actually a problem. We just built it and there was some interest that we're just building in. So I've seen a lot of that as well, where people don't spend enough time really understanding the problem and then also de-risking the market.
Yeah. No, it really is that difference between incremental versus exponential thinking, or in other words, like having that moonshot mindset of thinking how you can go 10x bigger with anything you're doing. And yeah, it seems like one of the core patterns in the work that you've done and are doing is that you have this particular focus and interest in solving massive and complex problems. So like, where does that come from? Like most people, as you said, work on incremental. Why do you focus particularly on solving massive problems?
Yeah, I think it's just like meaningful for me personally. I want to be able to do something that has like a pivotal change in the world. And that's like what really motivates me, is being able to see like this new future that can be unlocked or created. But also I just really love, something I've realized is I just really love solving technical problems. That's just what really excites me. Technical hard problems that people are still trying to figure out. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's like theoretical, trying to build like the next best ML model, but more so on the applied side as well. Like, how do we apply that to a real problem and then kind of solve that from like the theoretical but also applied side? And so I just really love complexity and I love solving hard problems. I guess part of it's just like, it pushes my thinking, it pushes me as a person, and it helps me like grow intellectually and as a person as well. And also alongside that, it's just meaningful. I think being able to create something that is pivotal is so much more meaningful for me and like a more meaningful way to spend my life than doing something that's just like incremental or just building something that kind of already exists or the world doesn't really need.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it really comes down to opportunity costs. Like, if you're going to dedicate yourself fully to something, why dedicate yourself to solving a small problem or doing something incremental when you have the opportunity with that same energy and focus to solve something massive? And it seems like you've been able to develop almost like a become comfortable with discomfort in the complexity that comes in solving those massive problems.
Yeah, that's kind of what you have to do. Obviously, working on the startup, that's what I've realized, is there's so much uncertainty. Like every day there's new things that you have to figure out. And it's definitely not like working at a company, which I've done. Like, I've done internships, I've worked at companies, and I realized like it's so much more structured. There's somebody that's telling you, here's what we're working towards, like, here's the milestone, and this is like what we need to build. And then you just kind of build it, and you have the support, you have the resources and the people that you can kind of back channel on and rely on to do that. But when you're creating a startup of your own, it's very much like you do that. Like you create the milestones that you want to hit, and you have to figure out why those milestones are the best milestones to hit and what is like the best way to get there. A lot of it is being able to think and be thoughtful and strategize. I think that's what it really comes down to when you're thinking about creating something of your own versus just following what someone else has already predetermined for you.
Yeah. I mean, that startup environment is super unstructured, and that may be intimidating or daunting, but I also find the fascination of the lack of structure. I find that fun because that also gives you the power to think about how you can develop things or how you can build systems and processes in place to do it.
Yeah. And I think it's like really exciting because it's like you're building something that literally does not exist. Right. And so you're really trying to change the way things operate, which can be really scary, but at the same time, it's just really exciting because there's so much to learn from that and so much room to grow and just be able to explore and try different things.
Yeah, I love that. And on that topic, you seem to have a really good awareness of the problems, the massive problems that exist around the world. Like, and you know, that comes in blockchain and what you're doing now. So like, how do you discover these problems? Like, what's your process for researching these problems and whatnot? You told us about Voltex, but do you have a particular sources or ways that you go about discovering these different problems?
I love research papers. So that's like, I'm just going to start off with that. I love reading research papers. So that's like probably what I do. Like 50% of my day is just like reading research papers and then coding and then just meetings is the rest of it. I think research papers are a great way if you're really trying to understand what is cutting edge kind of research or things that people are building in a certain area that you're interested in. That's a good place to go. I think Our World in Data, that's another good source that I would check out if people haven't. It basically just breaks down a lot of different problems in the world and gives you really good kind of data and numbers for why those are big problems. And I think that's another thing that's like really important in my approach for problem solving is like getting as much data as I can. And that's just how things click for me, is being able to get a number for how big a problem is and then actually see and break that down to understand what is really the core problem here and what is like the impact that can be created by solving it. So I think that's like a great source to really understand like the data behind a lot of these problems and give you kind of the contextualized information behind why those problems exist as well. Those are probably my main things, just reading a lot of papers and articles online as well. And then looking at sources like Our World in Data, McKinsey. I think a lot of like consulting firms also have good kind of reports that you can look at. McKinsey, Deloitte, they publish a lot of reports on different problems or things that they're focusing on. Obviously, they're consulting, so it's a bit different, but they talk a lot about kind of real problems that businesses are facing or people are facing. And so going through and digging through reports is also, I think, a really good way to get knowledge. Yeah.
Man, I got to start reading more research papers. That's crazy.
Yeah. If you're like interested in anything or like a certain area, let me know. I can send you some good papers.
Oh, you're my research plug. I like that. Cool. I appreciate that. Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to ask, like you're really interested in a lot of different technologies like blockchain, machine learning, AI, robotics, and you also are interested in a lot of different problems. So you and I, we both have finite amount of time in the day. So how do you go about deciding which technologies to focus on or what problems to prioritize? Like, why'd you choose Voltex, for example, and that problem, given all the other problems there are in the world?
Yeah, I think it comes down to like opportunity cost, which you described really well last time. But I recommend everyone kind of do this exercise. I did this exercise like last week where I just sat down and I thought about what are my core values and things that I really care about. And then also, if I reflect on myself like 5 years from now, what is the type of person that I want to be? What is the thing that I want to be known for or like described for? And I think that can reveal a lot about what you actually want to work on and just problems and things that get you really excited. I recommend a lot of people to do that exercise, like write down what you think your core values are that are kind of just like non-negotiables, right? Like if somebody didn't do that thing, you wouldn't be okay with it. And so that is one thing I think is important, not just in life in general, but also I think a lot of those understanding your core values and things that you like your personal manual for what things you need to have in what you're working on. Right. And so for me, one of those things was definitely like impact and like being able to do something that could change the world and like was actually pivotal. And that's probably what drives me. But also I think being able to like build something gets me really excited. So like creating a team of people that are actually working on solving a problem or creating like a system and structure around that gets me excited. And so just having that criteria was helpful because I was like, okay, what I'm working on right now, does that allow me to do that? Like at a higher level, that's what I would say is like the reason for why I'm doing what I'm doing is just because it kind of meets that criteria for me personally.
Yeah, no, that's a great framework. And just having clarity on your values is helpful for any decision making, regardless of what it is. But yeah, and it's funny that you say what probably drives you, just because you may not completely know what drives you, or is this like hard to fully articulate?
Yeah, exactly. I think your values change, and that's like, okay. And like, I know that because definitely I know my values are going to change, or maybe not change. Maybe I'll just get like new values. And I think a lot of your values come from, part of it, I think, is the way you grow up. But I think another part of it is just like life experiences, right? Like you go through different events in life and you're like, oh, like I actually didn't like how I was treated in that experience, or I didn't like how I reacted in that way. And then you just realize the reason for this is because I really value this one thing that wasn't here or present in this situation. So that's one example. But I think a lot of it is life experience. And as you go through more and more life experiences, your values and what kind of drives you will change. But I think your overall kind of vision and thing that you're moving towards should not change. That's usually what I found in most people's lives, is if you have like this overarching vision for what you want the future to be, or what you think your involvement in the world, what you want that to look like, that usually doesn't change, but the way in which you get there might change, right? Like your specific mission or your specific way to get there could change, but that overarching kind of vision that you have for yourself, I think often stays the same, or should stay the same. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah. It's less likely it can change. It could, but that vision is kind of the core. But yeah, there's like an infinite number of paths you could take to get to the same destination. So there's a lot more flexibility there. Cool. One last question I want to ask on entrepreneurial lessons is, if you could teach all young entrepreneurs one concept, whether it's related to life or entrepreneurship, what concept would that be?
Mm-hmm. there's a lot. But I think one of the things, it kind of ties back to what I was talking about before. I guess this is more applicable to deep tech, but often when you're working on something in like, I think in general, just in a startup, there's like a market risk with what you're doing. And then there's also kind of a technical risk with what you're doing. But I think what's most important is like actually de-risking the market risk, because you don't want to be working on a problem, you know, working on the product and like coding away all day. And then you realize what you're actually building is something that people don't really want, or there's not a huge need for it. Versus if you're able to actually find a market and de-risk that first, and then let's say there still is some technical risk. Maybe what you're building is hard and you know it's like an R&D problem that will take a lot of development and will take kind of pushing a certain aspect of tech forward. That's okay, because I think at least you have a market and you know what you're solving is a real problem. So obviously in some problems like that, there is kind of no market risk. Like if you're solving cancer, there's a market for that, right? Like there's certain problems where that's true, but other problems, I think there is both market and technical risk, or one or the other. But I think the market risk is the most important piece. And I see that mistake in a lot of startups where they will just completely ignore the market risk and just kind of code away all day. That is one of the reasons why most startups fail, is because they're building something that there is actually no market for. And so I guess for people that are working on startups in the audience, like I would just say to really keep that in mind with what you're building.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, the biggest mistake you could make is to build a product for a problem that doesn't exist. And way too many people actually make that mistake. So it's important to first validate the market. And if the problem does exist, your only point of failure is the execution, which is a better risk.
Yeah, even the technical risk, like you said, a lot of it is just execution. But even within the technical aspect of your product, there's so many different avenues and pivots that can happen. So that's okay. But like you said, it's just about how you execute on it. And there's different ways to do that. But if you do it the right way, then you know the market is there. And that's like a better situation to be in than to not know if there's a market.
Two more last questions I want to ask you. And this one's on the mindset and psychology that you go from. Because you're an 18-year-old female entrepreneur, yeah? And I'm curious, like, what are the challenges, limiting beliefs, or type of thoughts that you have faced as a female founder? And in that respect, like, if there's anything you would say to aspiring female entrepreneurs that might go through some of those challenges themselves?
One thing that I think people should generally just do is just strive for more. Like, I've seen a lot of other females around me that are just like, they just kind of reach for less because they think that that's what they can do or that's what they can get or that's what they kind of deserve. But I think often, like just in general, as humans, we're actually capable generally of more than what we think. So if you have this goal of like, oh, I think I can get this goal, then one thing I've always been doing is just like, okay, what is like the next best version of that goal? And I'm just going to make that my goal. Because I think we always kind of underestimate our ability to do something. And obviously that comes from a place of like privilege as well. Because I know a lot of people don't have privilege and might not be in the right environment to actually be able to get towards their goal. But I think that mindset in general is just so important to be able to have that self-confidence in yourself to be like, I'm going to go for this goal. That's like, seems unattainable or seems like it's harder than what I was originally thinking of. But I think often when you strive for more, it's better than kind of underballing yourself. Because usually that is what you do. You do end up kind of underestimating yourself. And that's like a great piece of advice I've gotten from one of my mentors. And it's just like a framework that I constantly think about as I'm doing things is like, am I underestimating my ability right now? And is there a way I can kind of push that forward? And in my own thinking. So that's like probably the biggest advice I'd give to just everyone in general.
Yeah. I mean, most barriers in life are psychological, not technical. So it's impressive how much just a belief in yourself and your abilities can get you to moving forward and moving ahead. So I like that. So cool. Final question for you. Yeah. So I'm curious, what impact do you want to have in the invention of the future? How will you invent the future?
Yeah, for me, I think with what I'm working on right now with Voltex, definitely the goal is to be able to help to increase the adoption of renewable energy and increase electric vehicles on the road through actually improving the development process of like batteries, right? And so for me, that's a future that gets me really excited is being able to work with these companies, these battery manufacturing companies to help increase the amount of devices that they're producing and to get those into applications where we can help to make renewables more stable or to help create more electric vehicles using the batteries. And so that's a future that I'm personally really excited about. Another future that I think is really exciting is just in general, like machine intelligence. That's another area that I've been working on is machine learning and robotics. And I think that is really exciting because one, it's a hard technical problem, but I think there's so much potential to be able to actually train machines to think and be able to make decisions and do tasks that humans are able to do as well. And so in general, that's a future that I think is also really exciting.
Yeah, like that. Thank you for painting a beautiful vision of the future. So yeah, as a closing note, where can people find you?
So you can find me on Twitter, which is, it's just Alishba_Imran_. And then LinkedIn, it's just my name, Alishba Imran. And then email, it's alishba.i734@gmail.com. So either of those work.
Amazing. Lots of options, but cool. Alishba, I know you're super busy, so I appreciate the time and thank you for sharing your wisdom with the universe.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Cool. Take care, guys. We will see you on the next episode. Thanks for sticking around to the end. I will reward your time investment by sharing some of my top actionable takeaways from this episode. This is something new that I'm trying out, so let me know what you guys think about this. So the first takeaway is that I think the reason Alishba has been able to grow at such a tremendous rate and achieve so much for her age is because she has tried so many different things when she was young. She explored so much, and then she went and proactively applied a high degree of self-awareness through writing about her feelings in order to identify what she liked and didn't like. And after she found those things that interested her, she narrowed down her focus on these things by finding the communities and resources to help nurture her interest for these things that she enjoyed the most. And I think this is so important because the earlier you can find what you like, the more time you'll have to nurture that passion. So the takeaway there is to go and explore and try as many new things as you can. Go research about them, look them out, find people that are engaged in those interests and passions and explore them further. The second takeaway is to share or reiterate the exercise that Alishba recommended in order to reveal what problems you want to work on and what things get you really excited. So there's just two questions here. The first is, what are my core values and the things that I really care about? And two, is what type of person do I want to be 5 years from now? What do I want to be known for? And just so journal on those and see what you find. And finally, the third takeaway is that Elishba mentioned a really great resource called ourworldindata.org. I didn't know about this site before, but I went and looked into it and found that there was so much data on different types of fascinating problems, which means that this is a great resource for you, whether you have a startup or whether you don't know what problem you really care about solving and want to discover what problems currently exist and are backed up by data. So go check it out, ourworldindata.org. All right, so those are my top three actionable takeaways. To conclude, I'll leave you with three quick notes before closing off. The first is that you can go to our website, inventingthefuture.ai, to find detailed show notes for this episode and a transcript of this conversation. The second thing I want to mention is that you can subscribe to my newsletter and follow us on our social media accounts to get updates on new episodes and receive ideas, resources, and other content that are designed to help you become a better entrepreneur and human. And finally, if you enjoyed the topics discussed in this episode, well, then firstly, it would be very much appreciated if you could take a minute to add a rating or write a review on iTunes/Apple Podcasts so that more people can find the show. And second, if you enjoyed this episode, you can join the Slack community for this podcast where we'll keep the conversation going by engaging in discussions related to the episodes in the podcast. In this community, you'll also be able to meet, engage, learn from, and potentially collaborate with other like-minded entrepreneurs, including myself. The links for all of these things can be found in the show notes. Awesome. So with that, I'd like to thank you all for listening. Take care and be infinite, my friends.